Welcome to The Conversation. My name is Graham Nystrom, and I'll be your host today. And today's topic is education in America. What's good? What's bad? What could be improved? How does it get improved? How do you go about improving an education system? Or is it perfectly fine? You tell me. The number here is 503-325-0010, and let's have a conversation about education. Let's continue the conversation about education. Okay, that's John Williams playing Asturias Leyenda, and it's getting a little intense, so we'll fade that out. Thank you, John Williams. And so, briefly, what is the conversation? This is a show where we're looking for you to call in. And one thing that we need here are topics. What do you want to talk about? I chose education, but you're welcome to call in and let us know what's on your mind, what you would like to have covered on this show. This is an opportunity for the community to talk to itself, which is why this whole radio station was created. So the number, 503-325-0010. We are reaching out to a couple of callers to start today. And the first person that I thought I'd bring on the line is someone very close to me. I grew up with this person. We share DNA, I believe. We are so-called brothers. My brother's name is Peter Nystrom, and he taught not in public schools, but in private schools for many years. And I do believe Peter is on the line. Peter, you're on the air.
Hey, good there? Morning. I'm here. Can you hear me?
First time with technical difficulties on the phone patch. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Sorry.
Good morning.
This is not my first time, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Well, good morning to you. And I understand you have a special guest with you named Stella, who may be having some thoughts of her own. Is that right?
I just put her down for a nap, so we should be free and clear.
Okay. Well, Peter, thanks for being on the air. And so we're reaching out to folks in the community today to ask a question about the education system and what could stand to be improved. And so, do you have any ideas on the subject?
Well, sure. My top three areas, we would always have areas of growth and areas of strength. And so the areas of growth that I would list as my top three would be there could always be more money for teachers. It was one of the leading decisions for me to stop teaching was that the compensation wasn't adequate for the literal 24-hour a day time investment that you had to make. The second thing was that because we are this information age, I do feel that we're in this transition period where every year we would go in and there would be the great new thing, be it Common Core, be it online resources like Khan Academy, and all the copycats that came out after that. And so there was a struggle for managing, time with iPads and laptops versus times where you're working on tangible projects and doing book work. And there was a lot of resistance from parents in that transition. And so navigating that, and whoever finds the magic balance of technology and old school, research and hard work is going to really be successful. And at the tail end of my career, bullying really came to be one of the top issues for parents.
Did you say bullying?
Yeah, bullying.
Uh-huh.
And that's another one where we are, as a society, certainly in transition with everyone wanting to be respectful and have equality and to listen to everyone's concerns. But it's something that is going to have to really change from the way that you and I grew up, where, as we were taught as boys, that we were going to resolve our differences on the playground. And that's not the case anymore. And if I have time, I just do want to mention my one area of strength that I really saw, and as I continue to see as a parent with kids in school, is the level of communication that's improved in education between parents and teachers, especially, the positive of this information age is that I feel I have constant connection with my kids' educators, and I felt that so many issues that could have been, sort of follow a kid from year to year have really been intervened at an earlier stage because of communication. Things like, online grades, just daily updates to how your child is doing, really means that you're not surprised at the end of, 3 to 6 months, however long your grading period is. And so parents can step in and say, let's fix this, let's make this right. And I think it was a common, it felt like a misconception that things were really changing as far as parents getting really aggrieved more commonly. And it was, I think, because of communication. And it was just, instead of having issues at the end of a grading period, you would have issues every day. And it was a good thing because, that kid could get put on a path towards success in the classroom, at least.
That sounds really good, but it's not, it doesn't introduce too much of an extra workload for teachers to manage all those communications with parents constantly?
It is a bit of an extra workload, but I feel that people are getting better and better at it now. Mm. We're so used to, 140 characters to get across an idea with Twitter that, yeah, I feel that people are being a bit more concise and feeling more confident in just directly addressing an issue.
Well, Peter, you've totally upstaged me this morning. I appreciate that. You're going to need to get your own show.
Okay.
No, but I really appreciate your input on this.
You're welcome.
All right. Love you, brother.
Love you, too. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye. Well, that was Mr. Peter Nystrom, my older brother. Thanks for the call, Peter. The number here is 503-325-0010. If you have input on our education system, what is good, what is bad, what could be improved, and how can it be improved? We do have another person on the line. This next phone call is with the president of Clatsop Community College, Chris Breitmeyer. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, hi. How are you?
Thanks so much for taking our call this morning.
Oh, no problem.
I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent. It's Friday in the summer, so I can't be doing too bad.
Good. Well, this is, I didn't give you much heads up or prep about the call. And so, stream of consciousness is fine. We're just having a conversation here. But I want to know a little bit about your perspective of how things are operating at the community college level. How does it currently best serve folks? Are there ways that it could improve as a system? Any thoughts or ideas to share?
Oh, sure. Yeah, certainly. I mean, at Community College Admission, just in general, writ large, is open access. We're here for everyone, and we're trying to do our best to meet a vast array of needs. But for the more traditional sort of pathway to higher education and a career path, I think what we need to do at the community college level is sort of switch our philosophy to make what we do work for students rather than make students sort of work for us. Or because, someone like myself who was successful in higher education, I was able to navigate that, so it worked for me. Mm. What we need to start looking at is from the perspective of those who are not successful, what can we do to allow them to be successful. I really don't think it has anything to do with ability to learn. It has to do more with systems that are in place sometimes that that disadvantage certain folks. And the more we can do to create pathways for people that are clear and remove any hurdles, the better off that we can be.
And so you're talking about experiences that your community college students have before they arrive, right?
But yeah, before they arrive, and even when they're at the community college, sometimes to navigate something like a FAFSA, that's the federal student aid form,
right,
is overwhelming for them. If they've not had a parent or a relative who's been through that process, just looking at that form or trying to fill that out is it's like, wow, I don't know where to start. And so we just need to make sure that we give them all the supports from once they come to our doors.
And so when is the correct time in secondary education to start building these skill sets and start touching on these needs? You know, would it be as a sophomore or is it more as a senior? Is it too late when you're a senior?
It's never too late. We have students who come to us who are, you know, well into their, you know, 40s or 50s. So it's never, ever too late. But frankly, the earlier, the better. Mm-hmm. One of the most successful things that I had been involved with in the past was when we reached out to junior high school students and brought them on our campus. We do that here at ClassTip as well. We bring them just to get them thinking about college. College is a thing that you can do and that you should think about. And so the earlier that we get to students, obviously the better. And I think we've probably heard that so many more times, you know, so many times in so many different ways. But it really is true.
And I know that, you know, budgets and money are always an issue for every institution. Do you think that there's a barrier there at this point with tuition levels at the community college level, unlike it used to be, or is it still pretty affordable for folks? How does that rank at this point in time?
It's an issue. I still think it's an issue. It's something that we're very conscious of. In Oregon, in general, when we, as presidents of community college, get together, one of the things that's always on our list is affordability. I do think, it is affordable, but for some, it's not. Really, where the costs are coming, frankly, is from sort of the extra fees, the textbooks, those kinds of those things can add up really quickly. And what we're doing is working on, as a state, we just dedicated some funds through our organization to continue research into affordable textbook options. And basically, a community college like Chemeketa Community College is really a leader in this. They have their own in-house textbook publishing.
Wow.
And they can sell those things for really, really not very much money. And so that really helps their students. And frankly, we're looking into sort of partnering with a school like that to offer those same kind of resources to our students.
So out of curiosity, my brother, who was on just a second ago, was talking about the benefits to some of the new technology and communications pathways that are available to teachers and mm-hmm. students. And I remember when I was in college that I felt like the textbook thing was a bit of a racket. And so is there a way that technology is starting to help in this area? You know, like, could one iPad be every textbook you need for college, and that's $300 and that gets you through, and then you're doing more of like an iTunes subscription to your textbook, and then you're not having this big bound copy that you have to sell back and then you never get to see again? And, you know, is there any tech implementation that's helping with that at all?
Grammar, you're trying to take my job. I mean, that you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what technology is allowing folks to do is I, as a faculty member, could self-publish a textbook. It could be all digital. And then, you know, I could offer it to students for free or a very reduced cost and have it electronic. And so when students walk in the door, some schools are going to that, where they give them an iPad and all their resources are there. And that is, it's a great way to do it. Now, for some people, it doesn't work. They still want that tactile. They need that in something in their hand, but we can easily do that at the school. We can publish a course packet for those students who want it for a particular course. So I think that is the way to get around this. We have a lot of electronic resources available through our library, or we let students check out textbooks from our library as well. So there's ways to do it. Our bookstore is even, for those, has a rental program as well. So there are ways to cut costs. But
well, I assure you, I am not trying to take your job. I have much respect for the work you do, and I appreciate it. And I'm quite happy at my own job. Thank you very much.
Well, and you're very good at it, too.
Well, thanks. All right. Well, I'm going to cut you off there. We've got a couple other calls on the line, but thank you so much for taking the call today.
Oh, no. Thanks for calling. Have a good day.
Thanks, Chris. Bye. This is The Conversation, and the number is 503-325-0010. We've got a couple of callers on hold, so we will get them on next, but it's not too late to call. We've got another 15 minutes in the show. We're talking about education, and we're taking calls from the community. And here is another caller. Hi, you're on the air on The Conversation. What's your comment or question?
Hi, my name is Robert in Ocean Park.
Hi, Robert.
I was a speech communication teacher for many years. And while I favor increased salaries for teachers at the primary, secondary, and college level, I also propose improved communication skill development. It's very important for teachers to know their subject and love their subject, but they need to be able to share it more effectively, to communicate with their students so the students leave the classroom humming the tune, you know, taking something home that's memorable.
Do you have any concrete examples of that or ways to improve those communication skills?
Well, would-be teachers or established teachers should take speech communication courses or Dale Carnegie or wherever they can improve their ability to connect with students. And that's the important aspect of this, is better connection with students.
Right. And so tell me again what levels you taught.
I taught at the college level. I taught at Illinois State University. I taught education department majors, communication skill development, and I did that for many years, and I think it helped improve their ability to connect to their students.
And are there, in your view, are there any sort of bright shining lights of education in the world that you're aware of? I know that Finland gets really good results with their school system, but are there any other examples that we can look to for inspiration that you know of?
Well, Finland, Norway, Sweden, the Northern European countries do a very good job. One of the things they do is they stress what we have not stressed enough in America, physical education and recess.
Uh-huh.
They're not, recess allows students to kind of get their heads together and come back into the classroom more energized and more able to listen and share their thoughts with their teachers.
Great, Robert. Well, thanks for the call. I'm going to get a couple more folks on the air, but stay tuned and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks for that call, Robert. And we've got another couple of calls to patch into the air room, so I'll wait while our fine phone answerer, Gabe, takes care of that for us. Thanks to Gabe, as always, for taking care of our phones. And we've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. What's your comment or question?
Hi, this is Elizabeth from Astoria. And I wanted to agree with the last caller about recess and play is very important. Apparently, it's just getting shorter and shorter, and kids need that break to refresh their brains. I completely agree with that. My main comment is the teaching to the test.
Mm-hmm.
I think No Child Left Behind emphasized testing. And there's a big problem with teaching to the test as opposed to learning to learn and learning about, it's not rote learning, but real absorption of ideas. And there should be much more literature, history, art and music are very important. And the emphasis on math for testing, and I think is a big mistake, and it really makes education much less compelling for kids, and whether they're elementary or secondary school, and I really wish there was a more emphasis on things like history and art. I wouldn't have wanted to be in high school if they didn't have those things.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big concern for me.
Well, that is great input. Thank you so much for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. The number here is 503-325-0010. We're having a conversation about education and what it takes to create healthy, smart members of society who can think for themselves and get along well with others. I think recess is an important one. And I think even just free time at home is an important one. I don't know. We haven't talked about homework yet. You know, how many hours of homework do kids face every night? On the documentary I watched on Finland, it's 10 minutes to 20 minutes of homework, and they take zero, well, almost zero multiple choice tests because they don't need to have the answer in front of their face as one of the options. They need to know the answer, and I think that's pretty solid. We've got another call. Hi, you're on the air. What's your comment or question?
Hi, I just wanted to agree with the last couple of callers on a few points. There was a really good point made about paying teachers more. And I would say that even more to the point that education in general needs to be valued more highly. I've taught in a lot of regions of this country and places around the world as well. And it's very interesting where education is highly valued. The parents get behind it, the community gets behind it, and the education is phenomenal. When it's not highly valued and people are questioning why did they give that homework or what's going on with that, not that people shouldn't check on things, but that, you know, well, maybe it's the political pull that's going on in the world right now that divides things.
I had an interesting thought about salaries and pay for teachers and how when I was growing up, there's kind of the, well, do you want to be a doctor or a lawyer? Because that's the only way to get rich. And if you want to be a teacher, well, then you must just be a very passionate person. You must be very, you know, and it's like, well, why? It just doesn't seem right to me. I think teachers should be paid the same as doctors and lawyers. And I think that they should be valued as much or even more than doctors and lawyers.
You know, when I first became a teacher, I heard that CEOs of major corporations were the most stressed out people in the United States, and the second most stressed out occupation were teachers. And I thought, no way. I don't have anywhere near that much, responsibility, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, teachers do have a tremendous amount of responsibility. But I thought about it. That weekend, my washing machine broke down. And I spent my entire weekend fixing a washing machine and correcting papers and planning for the next week. And I realized that CEO didn't have to worry about that.
Uh-huh.
He just, you know, called somebody, bought a new one, whatever. Yeah. It makes a big difference. And you attract the highest quality people. You know, it's huge. You know, the other thing is we divide ourselves on the political spectrum. You know, Common Core was a very well put together program. The testing on that was, as the last caller said, was not multiple choice. You had to think, or if it was multiple choice, there were multiple possible answers. You were to select all that were correct or all that were wrong.
Right.
Makes you think. But that got adopted very quickly by 45 states and then it became politicized. And it just got ripped to shreds. I don't think it's really being fully implemented in very many places now.
Yeah, well, the teaching to the test thing seems to be an issue, and that seems to be the reason why things like arts and music and poetry and recess are cut, is so that there can be more test prep.
Yeah.
When I was in elementary school, we took the Iowa Test of Basic Skills year after year after year, and look where it got me. No, but we didn't actually, you know, what's interesting though, is we didn't actually prepare for that test. You weren't really supposed to prepare for that test because it was a test of basic skills. And if you had the skills to answer the questions, then you must have been taught well, but you weren't taught to memorize a scheme of answers.
You know, I got one more thing I'd like to say, and that's that, you know, all the preparation for STEM is great. I have no complaint about STEM. I love science and math and et cetera. But when you do that to the exclusion of other things, it's just as wrong as doing anything exclusively. We need a fully well-rounded curriculum for our schools, and as Elizabeth said, plenty of time to let that curriculum soak into the deeper parts of the brain through free play and free activities.
Yeah, going back to that documentary about schools in Finland and how they were able to change their levels of success so dramatically, they have the shortest school days and the shortest school years of anywhere in the world. And so they do better by going to school less, which is really interesting.
Because people are more engaged. Yeah. And that's important. That is the important thing, I think.
And when they're not at school and they're not doing homework, that means that they are interacting on a social level. They're climbing trees and looking at bugs. They're playing sports. They're, you know, maybe even doing something artistic, for crying out loud, learning how to play a musical instrument or something.
Yeah, there's so much more in life than just, you know, studying in a book. But, you know, I was a teacher for many years, and I was a proponent of homework beyond a certain level. You know, from about fifth grade up, homework began to become an important thing to, as a training for how to do things. Because one of your callers was talking about college people coming in not prepared. Well, they need to start being prepared and getting ready.
Yeah, even to fill out the form for
about homework. But that training that you know, this is a job that you would take outside of here, just like any professional would.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that call. Any last words for us?
No, nope, thank you an awful lot. I appreciate all the conversation.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
So this is The Conversation, and we're talking about education today. Some good thoughts are being batted around, and I hope that we can carry them with us throughout our weeks and months and years, and you know, make every effort that we can to make our education system in this country as good as possible. I actually have a small clip prepared from that documentary that I wanted to show you, and it has to do with money. There's a movie that was pretty interesting to me, and one of the big lines in the movie was that the answer to 9 out of 10 questions is money. And that was the first time I'd ever really heard of you know, that or thought about it, and I started to see how that can be true. And so here's a piece on tuition and private schools.
Well, the same.
It is illegal in Finland to set up a school and charge tuition. That's why, for the most part, private schools don't exist. And what that means is that the rich parents have to make sure that the public schools are great. And by making the rich kids go to school with everyone else, they grow up with those other kids as friends. And when they become wealthy adults, they have to think twice before they screw them over.
Ooh, isn't that something? Think twice before screwing them over. So we've got a couple minutes left. We've got time to take a couple more calls if you have any thoughts or input on our education system, whether it's preschool, primary, secondary, post-secondary, higher education. What do you think of the education system? What are its strengths? What are its weaknesses? What could we change and how could we change it? The No Child Left Behind was a federal act. Could there be another one? Could there be one that does some good for our school systems? Is there a way that we can divert more money? I understand that school budgets were cut pretty extensively when the bottom fell out of the economy in the late 2000s. But since the economy has recovered, school budgets are actually lower than they were before that crash. And so how do we divert more money into our schools? How do we make it easier for folks to afford a higher education? And how do we ensure that every school is a good school? The point about no private schools in Finland and that every school is the best school means that you don't have to shop for schools. You don't have to look to move into a neighborhood where you think the schools are the best. In case you forgot, the number is 503-325-0010. Give us a call and let us know. Join the conversation. That's the name of the show. And so some of the things we touched on today were that teachers should be valued both culturally and monetarily. Teachers should be paid better. Children need time away from school, time not doing homework, to be in the world and to develop their personality and their personhood as individuals. Teaching to the test can be problematic. Let's see. There's something that I heard about when a school does poorly with its standardized testing, that sometimes those schools will close and then they'll reopen as a charter school. And then somebody makes a bunch of money somehow. And so is that true? Do people profit off of a public school failing and then being turned into a charter school? That doesn't seem right to me. Do you have any knowledge about that? We'd love to hear from you. I want to tell you that this show is a show where opinions can be expressed, and it's a safe space for that. It doesn't matter what your opinion is. You own it, and you are free to express it here. Keep in mind, though, that we are trying to make good things happen in our world through these conversations, so keep them positive. Keep them forward-thinking. No mudslinging. No blaming. But let's just work towards solutions for the problems we all face. The show is called The Conversation, and it's brought to you by Coast Community Radio, and I'm proud to host it. My name's Graham Nystrom. And I want to let you know that September 8th through 14th is our fall membership drive. And this is where we earn about a quarter of our annual budget for the year between the fall and spring membership drives put together. And that money is what keeps us on the air and keeps programs like this happening. And we all know what an asset this station is to the community. So please do continue to support the station. The staff, the volunteers, and the community at large really appreciate it. So thank you for listening and thank you for supporting.